A warm welcome to all our listeners. My name is Sruti Guttentag, and I'm here to present the second of a series of three podcasts brought to you by the Jewish Legal Heritage Society in Jerusalem. Some of you will have listened to our first presentation, and others will be joining us now for a challenge and exciting discussion of environmental values from a Jewish point of view. In our last presentation, we touched on some fundamental points of belief. We showed how the world was created by God, was left for man to use, but then man was told that he must look after the world too. Man has ownership, but a limited ownership over the world. Now we move on to new discussions, and perhaps we'll move from fundamentals and on to another aspect of the discussion. Those looking for spirituality in their lives have pursued many paths. Does the environment and nature have something to offer? Is saving the environment something which, as good humans, we're all just expected to do? Or perhaps, is there something more, something to be positively gained? Can we gain from caring for the environment? And can we gain from connecting to our environment? What does Jewish thought have to say about all of this? We start with a story. Reb Aryeh Levin was a man known as the prisoner's rabbi of our generation. It was not for nothing. He lived in the early years of the 20th century in what was then Palestine. Relations between the Jews and the ruling British were not always so easy, and many people found their way to the unpleasant environment of the British jails. Times were difficult for these men. Many suffered from depression and from other physical illnesses. Each prisoner needed individual care and attention. Who could provide such services and help at a time when the challenges of just going about daily life were so tough? There was one man. Rabbi Levin dedicated his life to caring for these men. Men who no one else had time to help. Men who had languished in jail so long that even those who had the time had forgotten them. He worried for them. He listened to them when they needed to talk. And he advised them when they needed his counsel. He carried their burden. He was a man known for his love of mankind. What inspired Reb Aryeh? Who taught him? Reb Aryeh tells a story. The story of his first meeting with someone who was to become one of his principal teachers. Someone who left an indelible impression on his life. Rav Kook, first chief rabbi of Palestine. Rav Kook used to go for a brief stroll every day. And it was this point in the day when his disciples or others were able to engage him in conversation. The two men, Rabbi Levin and Rav Kook, walked and chatted about whatever they chatted. Nothing out of the ordinary. While walking with him, relates Reb Aryeh, I plucked some branch or flower. Our great master was taken aback, and then he told me gently, believe me, in all my days I have taken care never to pluck a blade of grass or flower needlessly when it had the ability to grow or blossom. You know the teaching of the sages that there is not a single blade of grass here on earth which does not have a heavenly force telling it, grow! Every sprout and leaf of grass says something, conveys some meaning. Every stone whispers some inner hidden message in silence. Every creation utters its song in praise of the Creator. Reb Aryeh later related that these first moments with Rav Kook remained deeply engraved on his memory. These few words redirected his life. What does the stone know if I kick it? The blade of grass has feelings. But no, treat everything in the world with the respect it deserves. Now, if this is how the inanimate must be treated, all the more so man himself. Man who cries, man who weeps, man who has pain and suffering. Reb Aryeh later was to say that from that time on, I began to feel a strong sense of compassion for everything. Spirituality has many aspects. Let's start with something basic. Treating man with a kind manner. Developing a sense of caring and concern for people who one has perhaps never met. This was indeed the life of Reb Aryeh Levine. Rabbi Levine showed us that this can be found out there in the environment. Treat the world well, respect it all, and you'll see yourself change. Slowly, you'll treat man too with more respect. Let's return to these two rabbis, Rabbi Levine and Rav Kook. Rav Kook's treatment of nature and the environment around can closely be related to an approach found in early Kabbalistic writings in the works of Rabbi Moshe Cordovero, which stressed to us that there is nothing in the world which was not created indeed by God himself. He stresses further that therefore anything created is therefore the fruits of God's wisdom. So our respect for God must extend to a respect for his creations. Don't destroy anything, they write, without need, be it animal, plant, or stone. So we must respect everything in this world, not simply to allow ourselves maximum benefit, and not just because we've been commanded to do so, but rather as a basic sign of respect to God himself and as a necessary component of our relationship with him as our creator. Looking after the world had proven to be a useful exercise for Rav Kook. He had succeeded not only in coming to a love of human beings, but also in turning this world from a spiritually barren wasteland into a place in which he saw God at every opportunity, everywhere. Take care of the environment and realize why you are doing it, and indeed you'll find God. Let's take a look at a set of instructions which have been termed by some as being environmental instructions, and see how following these carry the same message as the message Rav Kook related. Connect with God through care for the environment. Shemitah, perhaps an unfamiliar concept, tells the Jewish farming and agricultural world that every 7 years, as counted from creation, no agricultural work of any kind is to take place within the borders of the land of Israel. No ploughing, no sowing, no pruning, and no harvesting. A year of rest for the land. Additionally, even that which does grow must be left for anyone to take. No private business is to be carried out on this year's crop. Why? What for? Let's carry on working. Why should we stop? Just think of the vast economic ruin. The world of agriculture will collapse. Two reasons are given. Maimonides, in his work, A Guide for the Perplexed, gives these instructions a very popular interpretation. According to his explanation, the goal of the sabbatical year is to provide respite for the hard-worked land. Vitamins are replenished, minerals and goodness return. The land is now ready for an invigorated eighth year, to provide better fruits. So, says Maimonides, these rules are environmental laws, set to encourage a more fruitful environment and better use of world resources. But is there something perhaps more spiritual about these instructions? One of the Jewish scholars in 13th century Spain gave reasons for all biblical commandments and instructions. He explains this one too from a spiritual point of view. We live in God's world. The earth is His. More than that, God controls all that goes on and watches carefully. If there's rain in the winter, winter rain is from God. And when the sun shines in the summer's sunshine is indeed directly from God. But how often does the farmer remember this? And how often do we ourselves remember this? The seventh year comes, and he and we all are reminded. Why have I not planted this year? What stopped me gathering in my year's produce? Surely it's mine. What's stopping me? And then he reminds himself that. Surely it's mine? No. God grew it for me. God made it rain, and God made the sun shine. That same God who normally allows me to take it as though it were mine has instructed me to refrain this year in order to remind myself that in fact all is His. What could be more spiritually rewarding than finding God in every area of the world and in every aspect of life? It's all possible. Take care of the environment. But nature has more to offer for those seeking spirituality. We've made brief mention in the first podcast of the words of the Talmud, who tell us that three things restore man's consciousness: beautiful sounds, beautiful sights, and smells. The Talmud continues, three things enlarge a man's spirit: a beautiful dwelling, a beautiful wife, and beautiful clothing. Some of these terms might be unfamiliar to us. What does this word consciousness mean? And also, how are we to understand words such as enlarging a man's spirit? And how are all these relevant to us? It is again Rav Kook who sheds light on the issue. God created man with a soul which naturally is content with its existence, happy with life, and calm too. Modern-day psychologists have shown a clear link between calm, serenity, and happiness on one side, and success on the other. Success of any kind is only really possible if one is happy and content. Man was created with all these qualities. Indeed, he's prepared for success. So what happened? Why do we all have such difficulty? Man complicated things. Society pressures. The world moves too fast. Our thoughts are overtaken by worry. We're no longer in tune with the feelings of our soul, but instead find ourselves driven and overrun by externally generated thoughts and feelings. How do we rectify this? Can we return ourselves to our natural state with all of its bonuses? Can we return our consciousness, as the Talmud calls it? And can we enlarge our spirit? If we connect to nature, to the beautiful world which God created, if we allow ourselves the company of things in their natural, beautiful state, then we are able to reawaken the dormant nature inside of ourselves. Our bodies are crying out for help. And almost the only answer is the peaceful and relaxing sensations provided by nature. We can disconnect from the distractions and return to our natural state. The chirping birds, the rolling countryside, impressive mountains, scent of flowers and greenery, the sounds of rushing streams and falls. Only then can we return. Caring for nature leaves us with spiritually invigorating lessons. We learn, first of all, to treat man in the way we should. And nature itself reawakens some long-lost spirituality inside of us. So anyone searching for a bit of inspiration and spirituality, take a look at the world around you. Care for it. Use that which can be enjoyed. And learn the lesson that each stone is teaching. Treat me well, because this is God's world. That's all we can manage for now. But we'll be back with a third and final podcast. We'll be discussing some more practical aspects of the topic. Implementation, how best to encourage care for the environment, and how to deal with some of those difficult scenarios when clashes of interest develop. But for now, thanks to Tarikum Shlishi for their kind sponsorship and to Professor Nachum Rakova for the use of his material. Goodbye, and thank you for listening.